Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levenier, and coming up in this hour, Mystery from Radio's Past. In a while, we'll hear the adventures of Sam Spade, but right now, it's reporter Randy Stone, portrayed by radio actor Frank Lovejoy, on Nightbeat. This NBC broadcast from July 17, 1952, co-starring Shep Mencken and Raymond Burr.
This is Randy Stone. I cover the night beat for the Chicago Star. How would you like to be driving down a city street in this year of the atom bomb and the flying saucer and suddenly find yourself transported over two decades back in time, smack in the middle of a gangland war? Well, tonight, that's what happened to me. In one moment, it seemed as if I had left this year of grace, 1952, and was back in the torrid 20s. My life threatened by the ghosts of gunmen long since dead. It was one of those quiet, dull nights with the fog rolling in and nothing of interest for it to hide. I just stopped for a red light, and that's when it happened. A man jerked open the door and piled in beside
me. Get going. Please, they're after me.
Who's after you?
Shiv's healed. He's got a gun. Get going, I tell you.
Friends of yours?
Huh? What?
Are these people that are after you? Who are they?
Abby and Shiv. Trying to kill me. Yeah, but they won't get it. Never.
Get what? What do they want?
This. This is what they wanted.
He opened a fist and showed me. The dashboard light shone on a figure of dark blue wax lying in the palm of his hand. A crude image less than 3 inches long. As crude as though molded by a child. It began to dawn on me that this Skid Row character was as crazy as a pink hearse. I pulled up at the curb. So they wanted that, eh? What is it?
Their lives. Their lives in the palm of my hand. They know that as long as I have it, they'll never get away with the dough. No, sir, it'd kill them. It's very useful.
Yeah, sure, Pop. Like a glass eye at a keyhole. They must be a pretty crummy pair to be picking on an old guy like you. We'll find a cop.
No! No cops. I don't need favors from no cops.
But if...
I ain't talking to them. No cops, you understand?
Okay, okay.
Cops. They ain't gonna make no deals with Jake Strand. No, sir.
Deals? What kind of deals?
20 years I did for it, and it's mine. Mine.
Jake, he'd called himself. The name, the face now rang a clearer bell in my memory. 20 years, of course. Jake Strand. A news item only a few weeks ago with a picture... Jake Strand, kingpin hoodlum of the thirsty 30s, now free. The story had said something about him being released following a nervous breakdown after serving 20 years for murder. Well, the part about the breakdown was obvious. Jake Strand, kingpin hoodlum, was now playing with little wax dolls.
They get near my dough, it'll kill him. See, it'll kill him.
It? Oh, you mean that hunk of, what's that made of anyway? Sealing wax?
You don't believe me, do you? Well, you think I ain't got no dough, huh? Just because I need a shave, maybe, or my pants ain't pressed. You think I'm a bum, huh? Well, I got it. See, $100,000. You hear me? Listen.
Sure, sure, Pop. When money talks, everybody listens.
You think I'm nuts, don't you?
Well, of course not. Perish the thought.
Yeah, that's what you think. You and them sky pilots who run the mission. Gave me a job sweeping up, and they think they're doing me a favor. Me, Jake Strand. I could buy him and sell him.
Oh, you live at the mission?
Yeah. Where are we going?
Oh, I'm taking you back there. It's late.
No, no, please don't take me back. They'll get me.
Who will get you?
Shiv. Shiv and that big gorilla.
What gorilla?
Gabby.
Now, Jake, when you jumped into the car, I looked back. There was no one following you.
There was. I tell you, there was.
Okay. Have it your own way. I'll see that you get inside the mission house safe.
No. They sleep there. Don't you understand? They sleep there. They'll get me.
Now, Jake, here's the mission.
Don't leave me, mister, please.
Oh, Jake, now I've got work.
Look, buy me a drink, will you?
But
there's Lippy's place across the street. Come on, set me up, will you? I'm busted.
Oh, yeah? Well, what about all that dough, that $100,000 that you were talking about?
What $100,000?
Oh, fine. Come on. Lippy's is one of those low-rent joints with sawdust on the floor, a piano player banging out ragtime, and an unwashed clientele. Jake pressed the front of his dirty shirt against the bar while I strolled over to a phone booth near the door. I called the star, got the librarian, had him check on the files of the case that had sent Jake Strand to Joliet.
Yeah, here it is. I got the story right here before me, Randy. He was convicted of the murder of Tank Daniels and Ed Morelli. Sentenced 20 to life.
A double murder and he got off with 20 years?
One moment. It says here, claimed Morelli tried to take him for a ride in one of his trucks. He broke away, grabbed Morelli's gun.
Strand must have hired a high-priced magician to make a jury believe that.
Not according to this. The court had appointed a public defender to handle Strand's case.
What?
That's right, Randy. Strand took a pauper's oath. He was dead broke. The case goes back quite a few issues. Shall I look?
No, that's all I want to know. Thanks, Mickey. What kind of a guy had I gotten myself mixed up with? The poor devil was riding a dreamboat loaded with a mixed cargo of rainbows and nightmares. The convoy he needed was a man in a white coat, not me. I walked out of the joint. Strand followed me.
Listen to me. You gotta help me.
All right, Jake. I'll see you home.
No. You don't understand. I can't find it. I've been looking and looking.
For what?
My dough, my $100,000.
Oh, yeah, I know. You told me.
I've been going crazy. Every chance I get, I've been riding the bus looking up and down Lakeshore Drive. It's changed, Randy. Everything's changed.
Well, streets are like opinions, Jake. In 20 years, they're liable to change, too.
Oh, you don't understand. It's disappeared. The houses, the trees, the road, the whole place.
What place? What place, Jake?
Caliban.
Caliban?
Yeah. You know where it is. You know. You know? Now, come on, tell me.
Now, Jake, you're wrinkling the suit. Now, let go of my lapel. Relax, will you? Now, come on, let's walk. I never heard of any place called Caliban. There isn't any such place.
You're lying. I went back there. I know I did. After we ditched Morelli's truck, I had the case, a leather briefcase with $100,000 inside. Caliban, it was there. I know it was there. I went back.
Come on, let's cross the street. Of course, in 20 years, the name could have been changed. What sort of place was it?
Oh, quiet, the trees. It was down there mixing the cement.
Cement?
I went there by myself, see? I didn't want the others to know.
To know what? Watch the curb, Jake.
And the smell of a peaches. Peaches?
Well, that figures. But just where, I don't know. No question about it, Jake Strand had spent too many years behind bars. He'd lost his buttons, but completely. I got him to the door of the midnight mission and pushed him toward it. Go on in, Jake.
Oh, Randy, please. I don't want it. They're laying for me.
Okay, Jake. Okay, I'll go in for it. One side, hmm? The place had been a store, now converted into a dingy chapel with a few crude benches and a section of counter used as an altar. A bare bulb hanging from an overhead cord shed a sickly light. I looked around. I was hardly surprised to see what I did see, which was nobody. The chapel was empty. I stepped back into the street to get Jake, and he was gone. And the street was empty, too. And that sound was coming from the alley alongside the mission. Jake! That you? Halfway down the alley, light glimmered dimly from the frosted glass of a side door, but it revealed nothing. I walked into the alley, peering into the darkness. Jake! Where are you, Jake?
Don't! Don't kill me!
There were two of them struggling with Jake.
All right, pal. Get him up.
As I raised my hands, it became frighteningly clear that Jake Strand's fear had been based on more than just a sick imagination. These two goons were real enough. And so was that gun pointed at my head. Experience, they say, is what you have left when everything else is gone. And Shiv's gun staring me in the face was an experience that convinced me that whatever delusions Jake Strand may have had, the two Skid Row bums who were after him were certainly real enough. I stood in the alley, my hands raised, while Jake struggled against Gabby's arm around his face. Oh, for the love of Pete, let him go. Can't you see he's smothering?
All right, Gabby, ease up. I want him alive, you dope.
Okay. All right, boys, all right. Take the $6 in my wallet and let us go. You needn't waste time on him. He hasn't got a dime, I can tell you that now.
He hasn't, huh? $6.
Honest, Shiv, I told you before, I don't know where the dough is. I don't remember. Honest, I just don't remember.
Oh, sure, it's just $100,000. You stuck it someplace and forgot about it. Could happen to anybody.
If you mugs believe that pipe dream about $100,000, you're nuttier than he is.
Ah, so you know about it, huh? He told you, huh? Real kibitzer, ain't you, pal?
Shiv, I didn't tell him
nothing. Shut up! All right, kibitzer. Turn around. Yeah, that's it. Just keep those mitts high.
All right. The only deadly weapon I'm carrying is a fountain pen.
I'll take it. And your wallet. All right, you can let him down. Turn around.
Thanks.
Six lousy bucks.
Well, that's what I said.
What's this? Randy's...
It's my press card. Don't strain your eyes. I'm with the Star.
Reporter?
I didn't know it, Shiv, honest. He just gave me a ride. I didn't know he was...
Keep your mouth shut, big shot. You'll talk when I tell you to, not before. I'm giving the orders now. You ain't nobody. You understand?
Well, then me...
Shut up! You, newsboy. That's your car out in front?
It's an old model. You can do lots better.
I ain't fussy. All right, both of you, get moving. To the car. And don't try to be no hero.
Jake sat beside me as I followed orders, driving past Lincoln Park and cutting through a wooded section for several miles. Finally wound up near a clearing used as a Boy Scout campsite, now abandoned.
This'll do. Pull up.
What are we going to do here? Get our merit badges?
Real funny boy, ain't you? All right, spill it.
Do you mean to say you believe any old guy who comes along babbling about millions and living on handouts?
No, pal, I don't. But this ain't any old guy. This is Jake Strand.
I bet you Jake told him.
Will you shut up? Look, newsboy. Maybe you don't know who Jake Strand is. Maybe you're too young, huh? Maybe you wasn't old enough to read. What are you trying to hand me, anyway?
I'm trying to smarten you up, that's all.
Oh, you are?
This stuff about $100,000. I don't care who Jake used to be, but right now he's living in a dream world. That money never existed.
Yeah, it's funny how everybody in Stir knew about that dough Jake hijacked off of Morelli. They were talking about it when I was there. I bet they're still talking about it.
I see. You and Jake did time together.
For a little while, pal. A long time ago. How about it, Jake? Did you give any of the boys a tip before you left, huh? I'm your pal, too, Jake. Remember me? I used to keep bar for you. Remember?
Yeah.
You remember, huh? And you remember where you stashed Morelli's dough?
No, I don't, Shiv. Honest, I don't. I can't.
You sure you can? Try. Think hard.
We'll give him a share, won't we, Shiv?
You bet we will, fair and square. We'll divvy it four ways.
Four? Well, thanks for cutting me in.
Why not? We ain't hogs.
Yeah, with all that loot, we won't have to work no more, Shiv. We're sleeping flop houses.
You bet we won't, Gabby. Nothing but the best. Swell hotels, fancy restaurants. How about it, Jake? Remember them nightclubs you used to own, them $200 suits you used to wear? We can all wear them. Where'd you hide it, Jake, huh? Where, huh? Tell me, go on, where is it?
I don't know.
There never was any $100,000. He was bankrupt before he went to trial. He didn't have a dime.
So you know about that, huh, newsboy? What else do you know?
That you're wasting your time.
You don't say. Smart operator, this Jake Strand, wasn't he? He knows he can't beat the rep, so he doesn't tell nobody about Morelli's dough. Nobody knows, except all his pals. Look at him. You think he'd appreciate having pals, that he'd be willing to share. All right, Jake. Out of the car.
What do you want? Shit, please.
You heard me, didn't you?
I don't know where it is, so help me.
I said get out!
Don't hit me, Shiv. Don't hit me.
Why, you...
Don't you move, Stone.
I had to play for time, for that one unguarded moment when I could make a break. I knew that if I didn't, I had a shorter life expectancy than a balloon in a baby's hand.
Jake, listen. Listen close. Let's go back. It's 1932. You're waiting for Morelli to come along in his truck. You fix the gate at the railroad track so it's down when he comes around the curve. He stops, you blast him.
Yeah, I know, huh? I know, but I don't know what I did with the money, Shiv. It's no use. I can't remember.
You can, eh?
Wait a minute, will you? You ever hear anything about peach trees growing around here?
Peach trees?
He said something to me once about peaches. A place called Caliban.
Caliban?
Yeah.
What is it, Shiv? Huh? What is it?
The club. Club Caliban.
Club Caliban?
Jake, is that where you hid the dough? The Caliban?
But it ain't there no more, Shiv. The club is gone. I can't find it anymore.
You can't find it. You can't find it.
What is it, Shiv? Huh? What is it?
Jake's old headquarters. He lost it.
Well, it sounds hilarious. I never heard of the place.
No. All right, newsboy. Back in the car. We're taking a little ride up Lakeshore Drive.
I headed northwest, putting the miles behind us. At one point along the way, Shiv made me stop where the road was being repaired while Gabby got out and stole a couple of oil lanterns hanging there. And we continued on. Just where is this Club Caliban?
Just shut up and keep driving.
I looked all over for it.
I'll find it, Jake. Don't worry. You see, they moved the road.
Huh?
A couple of years after you were sent up to Joliet, Caliban was on that big curve, remember?
Yeah, I remember.
The curve ain't there no more. They straightened the highway and left your joint a mile out in the woods.
Are you sure we turned off at the right spot? This road doesn't look like it was...
You talk too much, Stone.
There. Over there, between those trees, the Caliban.
Yeah. That's it, Chick. Many a drink I mixed there. Looks good, don't it?
Why ain't there no lights? I never closed. Those new neons I bought. What happened to them? Where's the sign?
All right, Jake. You and the newsboy. Out. Light those lanterns, Gabby. Give me one. We're going in.
We crossed the rickety veranda. The door was gone, the windows broken, the building a shambles. We paused a moment inside while Gabby held his lantern high and we looked around. And suddenly Jake sprang forward, bounding into the darkness of the building. Gabby went after him and I followed down the cellar stairs with Shiv behind me pointing his gun at the middle of my back. Shiv raised his lantern and there, cowering in a corner, was Jake.
Oh, Gabby, please don't, please.
All right. Where is it, Jake? Spill it or so help me.
There. There, over there.
He was pointing at nothing at all. Nothing but a concrete wall.
Where? I'll kill you.
Let him alone. Jake, the cement. The cement you said you mixed down here. Jake, do you remember?
What is this?
Was it the wall, Jake? Was it the wall?
What?
He means the wall. The cracks, look. You can put your fingers through them.
It's hollow, Gabby. Kick it in.
A small area of the wall disintegrated, revealing an opening about 5 feet square and 2 feet deep. And in it, four cases of liquor piled on top of each other. The topmost case had been opened, the broken boards lying across it. And beside them, eaten with decay, was a bulging briefcase. Gabby snatched it, knocking the loose boards out of the way, and handed it to Shiv.
The dough, huh? The dough.
Yeah. Bundles of 20s, 50s, and 100s.
All there, huh, Shiv? 100 grand, huh?
Yeah, more maybe. Yeah, keep your eye on them.
You betcha.
This looks like stuff you added to the Morelli loot, Jake. Yeah, nice little nest egg, eh, boy? Take a look at it, newsboy. So it was a pipe dream, was it?
Well, it's going to be a little embarrassing when those old-fashioned gold reserve notes start hitting the banks and they ask you where you got so many of them.
I wouldn't worry about it, pal. Because I don't think you're going to be around when that happens.
Shiv, you got a corkscrew, huh? You got a corkscrew?
What?
It's scotch, Shiv. A case of scotch open on top. It says here on this box.
Give me that. You don't need a corkscrew. Just knock off the neck. Just like this.
They drank from the broken bottles, the liquor running down their chins. Jake sidled over to where I stood and squatted down beside the lantern. One of the bottlenecks had fallen near the light. Jake reached out a finger and touched the hard smears of wax that had sealed the cork and ran down the lip of the bottle. I stared at it. The wax was deep blue.
Real smooth, eh, Shiv? Real smooth.
Yeah, it's lousy.
It don't taste too bad.
Can't you smell it?
Yeah. Kind of smells pretty, like peaches.
Peaches. The vague, almost imperceptible fragrance of peaches. That began to add up as I remembered something I'd once read. I stepped backwards, dragging Jake with me. Invisible centipedes crawling up and down my spine.
Don't try it, Stone. Where do you think you're going, pal?
They want a drink. Give him a drink. Here, take my bottle. Go on, take.
What's the matter, Gabby? Look at him. Couple of drinks in the big ox.
Jake, stop it.
You see what it can do?
What?
This.
Yes, it was that crude voodoo image, the doll of wax. The same blue wax Jake Strand had used 20 years ago when he'd opened and then resealed every bottle in that top case. I dragged him up the cellar stairs, away from the fragrance of peaches and out into the open air. There's only one poison that smells like the stuff you put in those bottles, Jake. The stuff they use in the gas chamber at San Quentin. Where'd you get it, Jake? Where'd you get it? In an hour or so, the sun will rise, alarm clocks will ring, and dreams will end. But for Jake Strand, life is now one endless dream, a fantasy to be lived to the end of his days in a padded cell. As for Gabby and Shiv, their dreams are over. The $200 suits, the fancy restaurants are canceled out in an endless sleep. Their last testament, a coroner's report, and their final honors, a prison autopsy. Well, life rarely uses rose-colored ribbons to tie up a story about people like Jake and Shiv and Gabby. Too often the loose ends are just left dangling. So let's tie it up. Copy, boy.
Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis. Tonight's transcribed story was written by Irvin Ashkenazy, with music by Frank Wirth. The part of Jake was played by Don Diamond. Others featured were Shepard Menken and Raymond Burr.
Nightbeat, on Tuned To Yesterday from July 17th, 1952 on NBC. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned To Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now it's the adventures of Sam Spade, with the character created by Dashiell Hammett, but chemistry unforeseen. When Howard Duff and Lorraine Tuttle, as Spade and Secretary Effie, hit the microphone, they became one of the most popular teams in radio drama. And it only came to an end on radio after NBC balked when the House Committee on Un-American Activities put Dashiell Hammett, the creator, in the spotlight, accusing him of having communist sympathies. Since then, history has told a different story, and Hammett continued to thrive with his writing and still remains popular as one of the foremost mystery writers of his era. And although he didn't write the script, 12 million people enjoyed this next broadcast as it was heard on a Sunday night at 8 o'clock at the time on CBS. From June 20th, 1948, it's The Caper with Two Deathbeds.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
It's me, sweetheart. Risen from not one, but two deathbeds.
Oh, Sam, I bet not. You wouldn't take that lying down.
Oh, Effie, you made a joke.
Well, you did first, Sam.
I did not.
Oh, you mean you actually
Now, don't pin me down. Anyway, I was present at two dying declarations. Would you believe, Effie, that a man could say something that wasn't true at a time like that?
Oh, no. You mean a man would be lying on his deathbed?
Oh, Effie, you made a joke.
Oh, Sam, now stop it. I don't know
what
you're
It's all right, Effie. I forgive you. You can atone by telling me how wonderful you think I am.
I think you're...
That you may do when I arrive in a trice to dictate my report on the deathbed caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair.
Many brave hearts are asleep in the deep.
Oh, Sam, you're a sailor.
Captain Sam, or is the brig for you? You got your logbook handy, gal?
Oh, yes, Captain.
So beware.
You make it, that's awful deep.
Be.
Oh. Date, June 20th, 1948.
Where? Oh, Sam.
I have no shame. To Marin County Sheriff's Office, San Rafael, California. Attention, Deputy Woodington from Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the deathbed caper. Dear Bill, the dawn came up like thunder out of Chinatown across the bay. In San Francisco, all we could see was fog. But on your side, it must have lifted briefly because somebody named Dan Starbuck managed to find his way to a phone booth, call me, and ask me to meet him at the 3rd Street Pier in Sausalito. I didn't see him when I first got there. I didn't even see the pier. It was too foggy. But in the glow of the neon lights in front of the Viking Saloon, I saw a man who seemed to be waiting for somebody. He was a big guy with a good face, but plenty of worry on it.
Mr. Spade?
Yeah, Mr. Starbuck?
Dan Starbuck. Come on down to the end of the pier. I'll explain as we go along. We gotta hurry.
You act hot. You wanted for something?
Well, not yet.
What's the caper?
Well, my brother's out there on his yacht, the Marguerite. He's dying. When he's dead, they may call it murder. I want to be there with a witness. That's you. In case he has anything to say about who did it.
Who did?
They think I did.
Did you?
Well, honestly, I don't know. It happened night before last. I went out there to see him. We've hated each other for years. We've both been drinking, and We drank some more. Then there was a fight. I drew a blank somewhere. Next thing I knew, it was around midnight. I pulled myself together, went into his cabin. Gordon was lying there with his head all caked. I realized I was covered with blood, and I was holding something in my hand, big glass paperweight. I dropped it. I got out of there fast and swam ashore. I planned to tell you a different story, but that's it. You want the job or not?
You think you'll make a deathbed statement that'll clear you, and you want me for a witness?
Yeah, that's it.
You got a lot of guts. I'm hired.
Good. Halverson? You down there? Halverson!
Who's Halverson?
He's a boatman. He'll row us out. Halverson? Hey, Nils?
Donnie?
Yeah. Is that you, Casino?
Sure. Can I do you some favor?
I want to go out to the Marguerite. I can't find Halverson anywhere.
Well, I guess I can take you. Are you sure that
you...
Yeah,
I'm sure. Sam Spade, Del Casino. He's the bosun of the Marguerite.
Glad to meet you.
Sam.
Any friend of Danny's. Hey, listen, Danny, you sure you want to go out there?
Any reason why he shouldn't?
Well, it's up to him. In his place, I would be on a freighter for China, way out there where the fog is more thicker.
No, it's all right, Casino. I know what I'm doing.
Well, your friend, you excuse me, your name?
Spade.
Pardon me, I better ask. The police don't want you for nothing?
Not yet, but don't make book on it.
Push us clear, Danny.
All right.
This fog is closing in, but I can still see the lights from the Marguerite. I wish we don't find her.
But we did. She was wearing clam diggers, an off-the-shoulder T-shirt, and was leaning against the rail as the dinghy pulled past a police launch and nestled in under the ladder of the yacht.
Del? Del, is that you?
Yes, Mrs. Starbuck.
Who is that with you?
Keep quiet.
Del, what are they saying ashore about the... Oh, I thought you...
You're Mrs. Starbuck?
Yes?
I'm Sam Spade. I'm from San Francisco. I'm a detective. Your brother-in-law's in the boat.
You captured him?
He wants to come aboard.
He wants to... Why?
He's hoping your husband will say something to clear him before he dies. Is there any reason why he shouldn't come aboard?
Oh, there's every reason in the world why he shouldn't. The police are in there with my husband right now.
Yeah?
The doctor says there's a possibility that he may regain consciousness long enough to make a dying declaration.
Mm-hmm.
If he's face to face with Dan, there's no telling what he'll say. I wish Dan wouldn't. My husband is dying.
Dan?
Yeah. What'd she say?
I don't know, but I think you better come aboard. He seemed almost delighted as he swung his weight up out of the dinghy and climbed the ladder. Del Casino, the bosun, followed, wearing a puzzled expression that turned to fear as we entered the cabin. The yellow glare from the lamp swinging overhead was almost blinding to walk into out of the foggy night. The first thing I focused on was the bunk that held the dying man. His head was heavily bandaged, his skin was chalk white, and his lips were beginning to turn blue. The room was tense with waiting. Ranged around him in a semicircle were the supporting players. Two doctors, one family type with a nurse, one police medic without, one sheriff with cigar, one police stenographer, female, with pencil and notebook poised, 9/10 of a widow, and us. At 18 minutes past 7, somebody moved. It was the dying man. The two doctors rushed forward, took his pulse and blood pressure.
The scuff. Adrenaline 3 cc, carmine 1, saline solution. All right, Sheriff, he's conscious now, but you'd better hurry.
Margaret. Mr. Starbuck, you can hear me all right?
Mm-hmm.
Take that down.
Can you hear me? Affirmative answer.
Now, Mr. Starbuck, we have to ask these questions. One, what is your name? Please try to answer. What is your name?
Gordon M. Starr.
You got that?
What is your name, Gordon M. Starr?
That's close enough. Fill it in later. Now, Mr. Starbuck, where do you live?
I'm dead.
You got that? 1277 Marymount, Pasadena.
Hey.
Now, Mr. Starbuck, let's try a little harder, hmm? This is a long one. Have you been injured, and what was the cause of your injury?
Yes. Hurts, man.
You got that?
Affirmative.
Now the second part. What was the cause of your injury?
Head.
Huh?
Head on head.
Do you believe that you're about to die as a result of your injuries and have you no hope of recovery?
I know. No hope.
Now let's get to the point. Who inflicted said injuries? Mr. Starbuck, please, you haven't much time, you know.
Go away.
Doc, is there anything you can do?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, this is ghastly. Can't you leave him alone? Can't you let him die in peace?
What are you afraid of, Maggie? What are you afraid he'll say?
All right. All right, tell them, Gordon. It was Dan that struck you, wasn't it? He was jealous. He always hated you for marrying me. It was Dan.
Now, Mrs. Starbuck, I know how you feel, but we can't allow this sort of thing. Please step aside so we can finish up here. Mr. Starbuck. Doctor?
Very low pulse. I'm not sure.
Dan. Is Dan here?
Here I am, Gordon. Tell him. Tell him the truth.
Do you identify this man, Mr. Starbuck?
Yes. He's my brother.
Got that? Brother Dan, he's...
He's the one.
He's lying. Gordon, you know who did it. Why don't you tell the truth? What do you got to lose now?
Nothing. Nothing. I'm finished.
You got that?
You finished me.
Gordon! Gordon, not yet. I'll come back.
Oh,
Doctor,
God.
Can't you...
He's dead. Well...
Okay, Doc. Dennis Starbuck, it is my duty as sheriff of this county to take you into custody on suspicion of murder. And I must tell you that anything you say may be held against you. You'd better come along too, Spade. Routine questioning, you know.
Okay, Sheriff.
And I don't think we'll need the handcuffs, will we, son?
No, I'll go with you.
Yes, indeed, son. It's always smart to come along quietly.
Yeah. But this is as far as I'm going.
Hey, Dan, come back here.
Hey, boy,
use
Dan.
Your head.
He only had one friend. He was the best friend in the world for a man on the land, the fog. The searchlights on the police launch spun frantically as the craft heeled around in a half circle to head him off. Instead of cutting the fog, the beams from the powerful lights bounced back from it and blinded the men behind them. After 10 minutes of that, they gave up. The sheriff had a theory.
Don't worry. Between the fog and the currents, I doubt if we'll make it. We'll probably recover the body in the morning.
And they did. But it wasn't Dan Starbuck's body. It was the bosun, Del Casino. And he was found in Richardson Bay, adrift in the dinghy from the Marguerite. Somebody had creased his skull with the same type blunt instrument that had been used on Gordon Starbuck. But Dell hadn't lived long enough to make a dying declaration. The police theory of the Dell Casino killing went something like this. Casino had shoved off in the dinghy to join in the search for Dan Starbuck, had rescued him, and been maced for his pains. Also found in the dinghy, but not as yet worked into the police theory, were two items. One, a waterproof wallet containing the seaman's papers of one Nils Halvorsen. Two, a tattoo mark on the right bicep of the deceased. A small heart with a name in it, Maggie. The brand new widow of the same name was waiting in my office when I got there the following afternoon.
Hello.
Hello to you, Mrs. Starbuck. What can I do for you?
Mr. Spade, I know very little about the ethics of your profession, and... Well, are you still working for Danny?
If you mean, do I know where he is, the answer's no.
Oh. I hoped you'd say that.
Why?
Because I want you to work for me.
Need a new bosun?
You needn't have put it quite so crudely.
No, I needn't.
Since your work is confidential, I'll admit I've done a few things that... Well, it's all too true. My first mistake was marrying Gordon Starbuck when I didn't love him. And I should never have let myself fall in love with Dan. And I certainly should have known better than to let Dell fall in love with me.
What about Nils Halvorsen?
And me? Well, hardly. No. Nils Halverson was employed by my husband for various odd jobs whenever we put in at Sausalito. Mostly he'd row the guests out to the ship. He rowed Danny out the night my husband was killed. At least I think he did. I didn't actually see him.
Where's Halverson now?
I don't know. He goes off on drunks for days at a time, but I have a feeling that someone has paid him to disappear. He might have overheard something.
Hold on a minute. You're going too fast. Are you working up to a confession?
Oh, no. It's just that I'm afraid a great injustice may have been done to Danny. After all, Mr. Spade, a man who's dying, I don't see how he could be altogether in his right mind. Do you?
The law says he is if he knows his name and address. A deathbed accusation is the strongest evidence a lawyer can shove at a jury. You can't cross-examine a dead man, and most people have the quaint idea that a man on his deathbed is a lot more truthful than he was when he was hale and hearty.
Then you think Gordon may have been lying?
Could be, or wool-gathering, or picking up some of the lines you were feeding him.
Oh, I was just afraid he might die before he... You see, I thought I might shock him into saying yes or no. He could have said no, couldn't he?
Well, make up your mind.
Oh, all I know is it's on my conscience now. If we could find old Halverson and force him to tell what he knows. He's a very strange man. He's devoted to me. If the police find him before I do, he might refuse to talk out of a mistaken loyalty.
To you?
Well, I meant if he thought I had anything to do with the... Well, he's very strange. I told you that.
What makes you so sure he's alive?
Why wouldn't he be?
If I'd been the killer and he'd rowed me to and from the scene of my crime, I'd see him secured in Davy Jones' locker. Fish feed, lobster bait, asleep in the deep.
Will you work for me?
I'll let you know. I didn't have time to get tattooed, but the rest of me was marinated enough. On my head, I was wearing a dirtied-up yachting cap. And the rest of me, I was wearing a pea jacket, dungarees, and sea boots. I was also wearing clamshell number 5 as I rolled up to the Viking Saloon.
Well, what'll it be, mate?
Akavit and Varta. Have you seen my cousin?
Your cousin? Who's your cousin, Prince Valiant?
No, my cousin, Nils Halverson. Nils Halverson.
Oh, no. You're Nils' cousin, are you?
Yeah.
Well, coming from the old country?
Yeah, Minnesota. By you, Minnie.
Well, no, he'll be right glad to see you then.
Where is he?
I don't want to say this too loud. Yeah. Bend over there.
Yeah.
He's in trouble, you know.
Oh?
Yes. I got him holed up down below.
Oh.
Yeah, come on, come on.
Well, by golly, I sure been glad to be going to see my cousin Nils. Nils Halverson.
Drop the act and get down there.
Hey!
Okay, Joe, I'll take over from here.
Easy, easy.
Okay, Danny, my boy. I got his gun. But watch him now, watch him. He's full of smorgasbord.
Well, Spade, you're the one person I didn't expect to see. But I'm very glad to.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't found you. I wanted to find somebody else first.
Halverson?
Yeah.
He's here. Want to see him?
That's what I came for.
In under here. Watch your head, low bridge.
Yeah.
Hey, here we are.
Where?
A boathouse under the pier. Halverson used to hole in here to sleep off his schnapps.
Where's he now?
Over here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's going to be a long time sleeping this one off.
He'd been missing since that night. Nobody knew he was here till last night. I headed for the saloon when I swam ashore. Joe hid me out here. He could still talk then.
What'd he say?
I wrote it down here. But it's no help.
Let's see it.
Well, it's just a jumble of words.
Marguerite. Marguerite. Merry Christmas drink. My beautiful Helga. Row, row your boat. Now throw me back. Row me back. $20 good and drunk. Fog rolling in. Good and drunk. Gonna be 5 days, no business. Oh, my head. Paint the boat.
All crazy stuff.
$20. Did you give him 20 bucks to row you out?
I didn't even see him. I swam out. My loving brother wouldn't have let me on board if he'd heard me arriving like a gentleman.
20 bucks. Did you frisk him?
No.
I'll have a look. Oh, I don't... Hey, wait. Uh-huh. Real soggy, but a 20.
I don't care. I'm sticking to my story. I swam out there. I didn't give him that 20.
Maybe you didn't. Maybe you didn't.
You gotta believe me. I didn't even have 20 bucks. That's why I got...
Shut up.
What's the matter with you? What are you going to do?
Come over here, Dan.
Why?
I don't believe a word of your story, and even if I did, it wouldn't make any difference.
What are you...
Shut up. You're going to stop talking and listen for a while. I stuffed a gag into his mouth and muscled him over to a piling and handcuffed him to it. He didn't even look surprised. He just stood there staring at me as if he'd lost his last friend in the world. But I wasn't looking at him as much as I was listening to those footsteps and the boards overhead. I waited for them to come back. They did. I walked across the soggy planks to where Nils Halvorsen lay in the shadows. Nils, I want you to answer these questions again. Now, this time, I'm going to take them down. You get lots of $20 and lots of drink. Now then, I know you don't feel so good. You don't have to talk if you don't feel like it. Just nod your head for yes and shake it for no. Okay, Nils? That counts in a court of law as long as there's a witness. Okay. Now, your name is Nils Halvorsen. Your address is 213 Bayview, Sausalito. That's correct, is it? Nod your head. Good. Good. That proves you're in your right mind. You know you were injured. Yeah. You know the cause of your injury. Hit on the head and thrown over the side of your boat. What? Huh? Not from... Oh, dinghy. Well, it's the same thing. All right. Now, you know you're dying. You have no hope of recovery. That's obvious, but nod your head. That's the boy. Now, Nils, on the night of the 18th, around 10 o'clock, after your usual working hours, you rowed somebody out to the yacht Marguerite in return for which this person gave you a $20 bill. This person is also the person who killed, who inflicted your fatal injuries. It is. Now, the name of that person, if you can possibly speak even in a whisper, so there can be no mistake. Can you hear me? Just say it close to my ear. Yeah? Yes. Yes, I got it. That's all. Now, I know you don't write, Nils, but make your mark here. Come on, I'll guide your hand. There. Now we're going to take... Nils. Nils. Well, anyway. All right, Maggie. Come on in and join the party. Don't try anything. The light's on you. I'm a better shot than you, and if there's a ruckus, the whole saloon will be down on us. They're all friends of Danny's, too. Stop there. Toss the gun. Okay. What's the matter, Angel? You look kind of scared.
No. Just disappointed, that's all.
Don't give up so easy, sweetheart. I always wanted to take a trip around the world.
We might go on the Marguerite together.
Yeah. Yeah, sailing into the sunset. Sleeping with our deathbed statements under each other's pillows.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I guess it wouldn't work. How much for yours, and what do we do about him?
Dan? I'll take care of that. Throw it in with a deal.
Okay. But I want it in writing. A little statement to the effect that I can keep under my pillow.
Fair enough. Now, all I want from you is a little statement from you to this effect. That you, Marguerite Starbuck, employed Nils Halvorsen to row you out to the yacht on the night of the 18th, that you there overheard a quarrel between your husband and brother-in-law, and that taking advantage of said brother-in-law's inebriated condition, you sneaked up behind your husband, hit him with a paperweight, and decamped, leaving the murder weapon in Dan's hand. You then started back to shore in the dinghy, and realizing that the only witness who could testify you were aboard that
night... All right,
night...
all right. All right, I'll sign it.
Okay.
We'll have plenty of time to put in all the legal decorations later.
I'm afraid we won't, baby. You're going to be spending all your available time at Tehachapi and Points West.
What are you talking about?
You just made a full confession in front of a witness. You heard it, didn't you, Dan?
Every word.
Oh, if I... Honest. An honest man.
Well, I did tell a fib. Now, this is really going to hurt, I'm afraid, Maggie. You see, we didn't actually have any deathbed statement to match yours.
No?
No. Nils Halvorsen was a good deal too dead to have made a deathbed statement just now. He's been stiff for 12 hours. Period, and a report.
Well, Sam, I'll type this right up because then I'm leaving.
Wait a minute, Effie. I had to do it that way. Don't you understand?
Of course, Sam. I quite understand.
But you object, huh? A cruel, ruthless, murdering, though beautiful woman, foiled by a clever ruse, a great acting performance by the greatest private detective of them all.
Is that all?
You're still leaving?
Yes, Sam. My bags are packed.
Well, pardon me for having feet.
Well, here it is, Sam. Goodbye.
Now, wait a minute, Effie. You can't leave like this, not without...
Oh, all right. I'll talk to you while I'm putting my hat on.
Well, can't you at least look at me? After all, you should give me a chance to justify...
Sam, apparently you're laboring under an apprehension.
Of course I am.
Oh, boy, am I glad I picked the last in June and the first in July.
What are you talking about?
My vacation.
Vacation? You just had a vacation a few months back.
Well, Sam, that's a year.
Well, if you want to take advantage of a legal technicality...
Now, Sam, don't say goodbye, man.
Well, it's customary, I suppose. It's lucky that some of us keep our nose to the grindstone, our ear to the ground, an eye to the future.
Huh?
Television's just around the corner, you know.
Oh, Sam.
Come here, sweetheart. You look lovely in it. Come here. Have a wonderful time.
Oh, Sam. Oh, Sam.
Come here. Now, go on. You missed your train. Where are you going?
The Los Sierras.
Well, just so you don't go to Kanab, Utah.
All right, Sam. You know best. Good night.
Good night, Sierra Sue. Now, who can we get for that part next week?
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie.
The Adventures of Sam Spade on Tune to Two Yesterday from June 20th, 1948 on CBS. That brings to a close this hour of mystery on Tune to Two Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.